We are very, very grateful to you for keeping us going for 50 years. It's just amazing. KBOO's been around since 1968, and hopefully we'll be around for at least another 50 years longer. To do that, to become a member, give us a call at 877-500-526. If you do, you become a member now, you call us at that number, you'll be entered to win a prize, and that's a pair of passes to the Hollywood Theater, any show, plus a $50 gift certificate to the Tin Shed Cafe. You can learn more about the rules and details at kboo.fm.
That is the theater in town that has 70mm screenings. So
yeah, I've seen 2001 there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and Lawrence of Arabia. Yeah, that is a great opportunity for you right now to go online at kboo.fm or call toll-free 877-500-KBOO. Do we still have the match? Just for a few more
Yes,
seconds.
We do have the match. So say you give $10 a month, $120 a year, that actually becomes $20 a month and $240 that goes to KBOO. You're just paying half of that. The rest is matched. That all goes to KBOO. So it's a great gift for us, and hopefully it's a great opportunity for you to give us a call now at 877-500-5266, or you can go online at kboo.fm. Now it's time for Between the Covers, and then stay tuned after that for Black Book Talk.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a news and public affairs director to manage the evening news and public affairs programming and to train and supervise volunteers. For this full-time position, we're looking for someone with proven experience in news and public affairs production, management and supervisory skills with volunteers with emphasis on teamwork in a collaborative setting, and ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Sunday, September 23rd at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/newsdirector-hire-2018.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Between the Covers. I'm Lisa Loving, and our guest today is Renee Sims. Her new book of short stories is Meet Behind Mars. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to start out by asking you, where are you from and what is your background? And then I want to start asking you for your vision around writing, because there's amazing stuff in this book.
Thank you. Well, I'm from Michigan. I was born in Detroit. Lived there when I was really young, and then we migrated to the suburbs. But I stayed in Michigan until I was almost 30, and then moved west. And I've been out west since 1997. I was in Southern California, in Los Angeles, and then had a son. Couldn't afford a house. It was so expensive there. Ended up moving to Phoenix, Arizona, which is what I consider my second home now, because I have lots of family there. Got divorced there, had a second child, and then because I was divorcing, started looking for jobs out of state, and ended up in Washington, Tacoma, Washington, in 2011. So those are the places that I lived. That's a little bit of my background.
And I did wonder, as I started reading Meet Behind Mars, you know, I just grab stuff and run with it, and I didn't realize it was separate short stories about different people in different situations, although we reconnect with some of those people later in the book. But I was wondering, wow, this is so weird, Midwest and Arizona. Wow. I thought I was the only one who was scared of scorpions in Phoenix. I thought I was the only one.
No, scorpions are terrifying.
Even when they seem really small. What is your vision for writing?
That's a great question. And I think that the first story in the collection represents all of the things that I would like to do in writing and that I would like to build upon and improve upon. Because you have different genres, right? You have realism and surrealism, because there's humor, because there's a surprise that kind of catches the reader off guard, and because it was fun to write. So my vision for writing is to be able to be original, which is hard to do, right? There's nothing really original in literature. There's just rethinking and redoing things that have already been said and done. But that's what brings me joy as a writer, is trying out new things, experimenting. And so That's what I'm hoping to do with the novel I'm writing.
I'm going to ask you about that later. So what brought you to Meet Behind Mars? And I don't want to steal the thunder of the collection, but I do want to ask you for our listeners right now to explain the title. Is it about science fiction? Are we going to... We do go to space. Stop. I didn't say it. But where did the title come from, just for our listeners now?
The title comes from a 1978 R&B song by Cheryl Lynn titled Star Love. And the reason why... that lyric resonated for me is because I wanted to communicate to the reader what I think is an important theme or overarching theme of the collection, which is displacement and disorientation and alienation. And so referring to Mars and outer space was one way to communicate that idea in conjunction with, I think, the cover image.
And I did want to come back to the themes. There's a lot of themes in this book. This book checks in, I'm going to say with us. This book checks in with us, with people, like at almost every stage of life, which is fascinating. But it's not a boring, this is what happened when I was born and this is what happened when I died thing. You're surprising me. You've got angles and elbows in there. So, and I have my own ideas of what I think are some of the themes that resonated with me. But talk a little bit more about the themes that, as you just discussed, displacement and disorientation. What else?
What are other themes?
And also, why did those themes resonate? Just, I'm really interested in what was in the back of your mind when you pulled together all these stories, because there's a lot going on, and yet they're all linked. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm in the stories, but I'm not in the stories. That's the part that freaks me out. You're in my head. I don't know how you got there. But what's going on with that?
Well, thank you for that. I'm not sure what was in my head, or I'm not sure that I had the same idea as I was writing each story, because I wrote these stories over several years, and I really dealt with each story as its own unit at the time that I was crafting it. And so I would think about that world and those characters, and it wasn't until all the stories were written that I started to look at them and try to think of ways that they were connected. So I can't say that I had the same thing in mind when I was crafting each story, but I do think that maybe what is in the back of my mind is best reflected in the story Dive, which features an African-American adoptee who is really trying to figure out, she wants to know more about herself, and she wants to know more about her ancestry and her history, and she wants to know more about her adoptive parents' family. And her adoptive parents are people who are kind of in the moment and let's move forward, and what happened in the past is in the past. She has a mother who is Jewish American and a father who is African American, and they both come from these kind of marginalized, oppressed situations, and they've had enough of it, right? They have crafted their own lives and they want to move forward. And so she feels alienated. You know, there are many layers to her alienation. She doesn't know her biological family. She doesn't know her ancestral history. And she doesn't really know the family that she grew up in. She doesn't know that history. And I think that's true for me as someone who was adopted before there were adoptee rights. So I think those are issues that have always interested me, and they just kind of naturally came out in each story as I was writing.
Can we stay with that story for a second? Again, I'm going to get all in my feelings, and I'm going to try not to, but lately I kind of try to give myself permission to get weepy a little bit, because the world probably needs people to weep a little bit right now. But I felt like with that particular story, part of the theme for me was parenting. How to parent a child when you're not sure how. And I was struck by what that character learned that her parents taught her, and how hard that was, and how even as an adult, she didn't really even necessarily value those things. But in the last moment of that story, everything her parents had taught her was actually coming to bear, but I don't think she was thinking about that. And maybe I'm just projecting. What about the parenting itself? There's a lot of parenting.
Yeah, there
in these stories.
A lot of parenting, a lot of children who don't understand their parents, or who, as you described, come later to value the things that their parents tried to do. Parenting is hard. It's an impossible job for most people today, as you're trying to balance work, ambition, and the things that are required of domestic life and raising children. Right? We're raising children. We're trying to raise human beings who are empathetic and smart and caring and good citizens, and that takes a lot of work. So I'm interested in all of that. I'm interested in how that works and doesn't work when it falls apart. And I do think that in a lot of the stories, including Dive, there are moments where the characters recognize and appreciate how difficult parenting is, even if they're still angry at their parents.
Okay, now I'm going to sound wild, okay? I feel like there's self-parenting in here, too.
Mm.
I feel as if there's more than one character who is facing adversity and they can't get support or wisdom from somebody else. Can you talk about that a little bit? Can you talk about that a little bit? I'm thinking of this young man who works in a pawn shop. And by the way, one of the things I love about this collection is that this is just the way I feel about it. Every single story ends on a cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. And maybe you didn't see it that way, but I see it that way. I'm like, wait a minute, where's the next paragraph? What? You know, there must be something on the next page. You're right, people are, I don't want to say on a ledge, because that's not something I want to put in people's minds, but people are right on the edge of taking a major dive in almost every story, and then you just leave us there. It's like, did you do that on purpose? Are you trying to make us think, or what?
Well, I do think that life is messy and pretty much unresolved. And one of the things that kind of irks me about short stories that are tidy is that it doesn't reflect the way that most of us experience things in our real lives. Yeah, we have small epiphanies here and there, and we come to understand things that maybe we were grappling with in the past, but our lives don't change tremendously, right? And so making a story that has a huge epiphany where the character's forever changed or there's some resolution that happens at the end, to me seems like a false idea.
But you take us right to the edge of that. You take us right to the edge of the epiphany or the change, and then you're just, and that fascinates me completely.
Well, I think it's interesting also to think about what might happen next, right? To have the reader imagine what's going to happen. That's one of the things that writers who I've studied with, I'm thinking of Yusuf Komunyakaa, who talked about the blank space in a poem on the page, how much we don't think about silence and the value of silence on the page and what we can do with that, what we can communicate with the blank space. I'm thinking about Toni Morrison, who talks about, you know, the reader is an active participant in reading a novel, so that you have to leave some space for them to use their imagination and fill in what you haven't given them. We want active readers. And so I think leaving people with just enough to imagine what's coming after this is a way of respecting the reader and getting them to engage.
I have to say, too, that the first story, the very first story, I didn't like that woman. I was like, oh, get me out of her head. What am I doing here? And but I was with her, right? Mm-hmm. And you are putting us in the minds of people who are in crunchy turning points. Mm-hmm. When I say crunchy, I mean crunchy, like it's like climbing over construction debris, right? And so you're showing us, you're taking a flashlight and putting it into the minds of people that are making unpopular choices or people that are making controversial choices. Again, like that guy in the pawn shop. And I think that's my favorite story. I mean,
you're the first person to say that. Thank you.
I love how, let me back up and say, we're living in a time right now when we're all afraid.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
Even people that weren't traditionally afraid 20 years ago are afraid now. Whether that's justified or not, it feels like that someone turned up the heat underneath all of our rear ends. So when you are in the middle of people's minds, in the middle of people's thought processes, it makes me think of all the people that I don't know. It makes me think of all the people that I get mad at and I have no idea what's going on in their head. It just fascinated me. You took a crowbar and you just pried a little bit of opening in my head so light shines through. But who did you write this book for? Who do you want to know is reading it?
I wrote this book for people who enjoy short stories, for people who like fiction, for people who are interested in character-driven fiction, getting in people's heads, as you described. With that story, who do you love? And it's interesting. I'm happy to hear you say that you enjoyed it, because I think that's one of my favorite stories, too, even though I don't know that it works, and that's fine. And I thought about not keeping it in there because I'm like, well, this story, there are some things that I don't know that it all came together in the end. But I think it does work on a sentence-by-sentence level, on a paragraph level. I think the attention to language is really keen in that story. And the thing that was interested in, or the question that compelled me to write this story, was how do we know each other? How do we get to know people across cultures, across genders, when we have all these ideas, all these stereotypes that we're bombarded with daily? And especially now, as you say, this is a hard time, because we really are confronting all these issues around identity, around nationalism, and around cruelty. Right, and how it affects our relationships and our interactions. And I was interested in trying to look at, you know, two people who are maybe damaged, who are maybe anti-heroes, that people that we can't admire. And how do they connect? And how do they love each other through getting through all of that detritus?
There's a line that you had in one of these stories, and I wrote it down because it wigged me out. I know people who are too stuck in their own heads, and I don't know what to say to them. But this is one thing that one of your characters says. You can't change your situation and dwell on how bad it is at the same time. Now, I know people that would argue that point. And I'm not even saying they shouldn't.
Right.
But there's something about these stories that I feel like take me back to a time when, and I'm not even going to say a simpler time, but a time when we weren't all so afraid that a trapdoor was going to open under our feet. There were times when we were all less, as a society, I think, less narcissistic. And even some of the most wonderful people that I respect the most right now are getting called out for bad things they did. And how did you meet this array of characters in this book? Where did they come from? Because some of them, I don't like them, but I do. Mm. So they're like family, in other words.
Like all of our families. I would say that as someone who's interested in characters and fiction, I observe people, right? I'm always interested. I was telling someone this recently, someone who I felt was kind of a bad person in my orbit, right? And I was like, this is what I want you to know. I am always thinking about motivation, right? That's something that I'm always thinking about. So I'm a good observer of people. I listen to people. I pay attention to gestures. I would say these characters are, you know, an amalgamation, or they're a combination of several people that I've met over several decades. They don't represent, you know, real people, but they have characteristics of real people that I've met and interacted with. And narcissism is an interesting, phenomenon in this day and age. I would say that I had really good advice when I first started writing from Terry Wolverton, who is a poet in Los Angeles, who said during one of the workshops that you'll never be a better writer than you are as a person. And I've never forgotten that. And, you know, I don't think I'm the best person, and I know lots of writers who are, like, not the kindest people when you meet them in person, but I do think there's something about being honest when you're on the page and walking away from that ego and self-interest and narcissism in order to really dig at the truths that good fiction, you know, is trying to answer.
Because some of these stories feel a little dangerous to me, I'm putting that out. It's kind of dangerous writing.
I wanted to respond to that because I think also because I did write a lot of these stories several years ago, even though they're just being noticed now, maybe what you're picking up on is that they were written during a different era, right? That the danger maybe is I wasn't concerned because I didn't know if they were going to get published. And I wasn't writing toward a market, and I wasn't trying to write in order to find an agent or to find a publisher. I was writing what interested me.
And I'm not saying that the stories are old or anything like that. It's like I read this and I went, wow, I'm not sure if I know very many people who think that anymore. Or I wish I knew more people like the guy that works in that pawn shop who could sit there and think of what could be. And he doesn't have to be hemmed in by what someone said about that woman and what it looks like and what her teenager looks like. He just sees that whole thing. He's like, no, I'm ready and I'm doing this now. I want to believe that there are still people, I'm not getting in my feelings now, but I want to believe that there are still people out there, those of us who look at someone who could be a life partner and just say, I know this sounds wild, but I know we can build something beautiful. I worry that we don't build enough beauty anymore, but I love this book, Meet Behind Mars.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. I think one of the themes you were talking about, the fact that you think there are lots of different ideas in this book, I think pushing back or resisting cultural conformity and uniformity is one of the ideas, right? And I think that that's something that a lot of the characters, like the woman who is on Lantau Island in the rural village, Mui Wo, you know, she doesn't want to follow the crowd, even though there are things about going back home and joining her high school classmates that interest her.
And speaking of displacement, she's on this island on the other side of the world, and her reunion is going to happen in Compton.
That's right.
And I had asked you to read a little part of that story, but I want to ask you a few other questions first, because part to me, this short story, it's like a yardstick of change, in my opinion, right? And I'm old enough to qualify for the senior citizen discount at Denny's now, right? And when I realized that I could get, thank you, I realized I could get my pancakes for $5, that blew my mind. Like, and I had to stop and think about life. Are you really getting the bacon? No, I'm just kidding. Of course I got the bacon. But what really knocked my socks off about this collection had to do with understanding who we are as we move through life, coping with the disappointments, right? But also our individual creative processes. As an old woman, I'm just put that out. As an old woman, I still have a lot of stuff I want to achieve in my life. And there are times when I want to give up. I'm like, you'll never do that. But I bet I can do it. Yeah. And so I don't even know why I think like that. But our creative processes as women, as female identified people, as everyone, our creative processes can be one of the biggest burdens we carry around. And even how we define what is a creative process, right, is huge. And it impacts our mental health as we get older. Mm-hmm. I now, this is a deep question, but I wanted to ask you this. And if you don't want to answer it, that's fine. I wanted to ask about your creative process. Like, because there are a lot of people listening right now who write and who dream of writing. They may never have been published, or maybe they're painters, or maybe, you know, there's so many people out there, scientists, like some of the scientists in your book, right? Who are trying to reach space with a balsa wood plank. Like, that's a creative process. Like, what is your goal? But how does your creative process work? And is it all about writing? Is there something else you do? And how do you bring that stuff to the page, to the platform that you're going to share it with?
My process is pretty messy. let me just say that up front. And partly it's messy because I'm busy, because I haven't had the luxury, and I don't know many artists who do have the luxury, of just focusing on writing, right? I have a job, I have a family, I have obligations to communities that I belong to. So I've always fit writing in whenever I could. The way that I usually get inspired is there's an idea or a voice or a line, right? A line of dialogue that I hear in my head, and at some point it won't shut up and I just have to follow it, and I have to make time to sit down and start writing and following the idea. And then the real work is in revision, and that for me in the past has taken a long time. I think I'm getting a lot better at it, and I think I can do it in less time, but revision is where the story really comes alive. And I've learned to enjoy that process, because that's where the story either is gonna work or it's not. right? That's where you learn that this is something that you can take out into the world, or it's something that you're going to have to recycle, use parts of it for something else, which I've done. So if something is not working, part of my process is to use it in maybe another genre. The first novel that I was trying to write when I was in the MFA program ended up being an essay, a nonfiction essay, that really worked well. And it's because I was always interested in the real life idea, which was violence and gun violence. But trying to create characters and scenes around that, when that wasn't what interested me, I wanted to talk kind of straight about gun violence, it came out much better as an essay. So I don't throw things away. There are remnants of pieces that I hold on to and try to think about how to do them justice.
That's what I love about writing, is that the stuff doesn't disappear from the page unless you're in Hurricane Katrina. You didn't hear me say that. We're talking about Meet Behind Mars.
That was smooth.
I know, right? These were short stories written by Renee Sims. We have a few minutes to go. I had asked if you might be able to read this part of this book, which you had talked about one of the themes being nonconformity. And yeah, here it is. It's the list of the woman who's organizing her family, her high school reunion. It's her Compton high school reunion from an isolated island in China. And mm-hmm. there's something about this list of things that this is what she really wants to actually organize for the high school reunion.
For laughs, you type a list of future agenda items. The list makes you think through the decades. It helps you consider what you and your classmates might yet have in common. Committee for DHS Reunion Class of 1984, Future Agenda Items. 1. Regarding our classmates who are white, do they even plan to show up? Discussion. 2. The classmates we lost to gunfire. Compile list. 3. What was school integration? Discussion. 4. The classmates we lost to cancer. Compile list. 5. How we survived the Reagan years. A prayer circle. 6. A remembrance of Michael Jackson. PowerPoint presentation during reunion dinner. 7. A Prince Was Always Better retrospective. Competing PowerPoint on opposite wall. 8. Let's talk about the fast track. Who knew and who had no idea? Discussion. 9. Why do we all have the same middle management, upper management, and government jobs? A research committee. 10. Our classmates who are locked up. PowerPoint. 11. The classmates who lost their homes to the foreclosure mess. A GoFundMe account.
I had other questions, but like I said, I just woke up this morning. I was like, no, I want to talk about what's really in this book and not those boring questions about, you know, who are you inspired by? We'll get to that next time. When your novel comes out, we'll get you back on these airwaves.
Thank you so much.
Renee, I just really want to thank you for being here. Her book is Meet Behind Mars. Thanks for coming in today. I'm Lisa Loving. This is Between the Covers. Hey, read a book, y'all. Thanks for listening.
That, of course, was Lisa Loving interviewing Renee Sims. Renee is talking about her debut short story collection, Meet Behind Mars, and that is Between the Covers on KBOO, and you are now listening to the KBOO Fall Membership 2018, 50 years of KBOO conch, and yes. There's listeners out there, it's hard to believe, who aren't members yet.
Yes.
But they're enjoying our programming.
It's been such a lively morning.
Yes. There's no better time to give us a call if you're not a member. And I'm just kidding. I don't want to guilt you out or anything, but I had listened to KBOO for several years before I became a member. I guess kind of feeling it out, but also maybe from slacking off a little bit. But then I called up. I feel so much better now. If you would like to feel so much better, give us a call at 877-500-5266.
Yes, we have been, oh my gosh, we've been listening to a very lively discussion, as always, with Lisa Loving, one of the hosts of Between the Covers. And that, oh boy, that has been a show that's been playing every week for years and years and years now.
It goes back to Jim Schumach. Was he the first host of that?
It could be, indeed. It's been just an amazing parade of incredible authors. And, you know, this is one of the last places on the dial, on the terrestrial dial, where you can hear authors every week talking like deep dive stuff about their work and about their history. And, you know, this is one reason why Portland is such a literary town, why Portland is so, the culture is so lively.
I was
here.
Just going to say that, Conch, and it's not just authors talking, you know, us calling them up and they're in Brooklyn, New York, or in Paris or something like that. They're actually here in the KBOO studio. At least their interview was recorded there.
Here, yeah.
And the big reason for that is what Conch was saying about Portland being such a major literary town. I think that's owed almost exclusively to the fact we have the best bookstore in the world in town here, Powell's Books. Authors come out and read, and we get authors, you know, the great authors, we got the upcoming authors, we got interesting authors that not everybody has heard of. So Between the Covers is a way of getting that information out to you. You're not only listeners out there, but obviously you're readers. And that's been going on for a long time, not quite the 50 years as KBOO has, but about 30, 35, mm-hmm. anyway, a long time. We need your support right now. We come to you just a few times a year to ask for that. About 80% of our operating budget comes from listeners like you, and I'm talking right to you, 877-500-5266. Say you give a sustaining membership of $10 a month. That's $120 a year. We do have matching funds up to $240. So your $10 a month would actually be $20 a month to KBOO. But you've got to call us now at 877-500-5266. And Conch, there's also the drawing, too.
There is the drawing. This is amazing. The prize drawing, we have one of them every day, I believe, a new one. This one is for today and tomorrow. Become a member now. Be entered to win a prize. Call 877 877-